On November the 10th, 2010, students across the country converged upon London to protest a rise in tuition fees. Not since anti-war activists rocked Europe in the late 60s have students united against the government on such a massive scale.
1968 was a very, very remarkable year for students. It wasn't actually the biggest in Britain. In Britain, there were only a small number of occupations.
Central London has been the site of many a protest over the years, but has also seen some of the worst cases of police brutality and the ruthless suppression of democratic freedoms by the state. In 2010, student demonstrators would brave the same threat at Millbank and Parliament Square. The violent attack to Millbank, the headquarters of the Conservative Party in London, by a group of angry students during that demonstration, was one of the major events during the student protests.
It's no good to say this was just a very small minority. It wasn't. There were quite a number of people who clearly were there wanting to pursue violence and to destroy property.
Actually, there's been very little violence. It's been enormously exaggerated by the press. On the demonstrations that have taken place, there were tens of thousands of students present. A very small number took part in what turned out to be a fairly heavy demonstration at the Conservative Party central office.
People don't just go out and protest for the sake of it because they've got nothing else to do, but because they're angry, because they want to get their point across.
I don't believe that students were out there in order to cause violence on the protest. They were out there to defend education.
When you look at the violence, I think you should not look at the violence of students, but look at the violence of this government and the police against the people who have legitimate concerns that what they voted for is not what they're getting.
There are demonstrations by young people who are very angry at not only the prospect of many universities having courses cut and therefore they're going to get less good quality teaching, but they're also very angry for the next generation of students who've already seen their educational maintenance allowance cut, which is the payment that's paid to students in college before they go on to university in order to keep them in college. And then they've seen this huge increase in the student fee up to £9,000 per year. So I've got a lot of admiration for the students for speaking up for the right to education, but also speaking up for the next generation.
At what point, when you keep getting pushed back, you keep trying to say what you want, what you feel, and you keep getting pushed back and told no, no matter how many of you there are on the streets, no matter how many of you vote, however you exercise your democracy, and you keep getting ignored, what do you expect people to do?
As well as having to contend with the police, students found themselves on the receiving end of some unexplained hostility from certain elements of the British media.
On the first demonstration at November the 10th, when we were at Millbank, we were sort of dancing around, there was music playing, and there were some people inside the building. There was also another building next to us that had massive TV screens, and we were watching the coverage of the demonstrations on the television at the same time, and it was really surreal. I mean, what we saw on the TV did not at all reflect what was going on in the demonstration.
Sky and certain right-wing media frame the debate is horrible because they're pushing a political agenda that ultimately favours big business, that favours no controls on markets, and that looks to further the wealth of a group of people that are already incredibly wealthy. So Sky News, I just ignore it.
Solidarity forever!
Well, the media coverage was incredibly sensational, and the National Union of Students adopted a very cautious approach to the whole thing. Many other students were much more assertive, and local student unions far more assertive, but the media played up the allegations of violence.
The attack to the car carrying Prince Charles and his wife in London was another issue the British media outlets stressed on.
I don't think the mainstream media was entirely fair on the student protests. I think that there was an attempt to portray the students as violent and therefore divert the entire debate, shift the entire debate onto, you know, aren't these students violent? Look at these protesters. You know, look at the way that protest is evolving in our society.
And I think the media have been consistently provocative and biased in their coverage. And I don't think it's true that society automatically believes what the media say. I think that we actually gained a lot of support from society. I received thousands, I mean, literally thousands of emails, Facebook messages, handwritten letters from people saying how brave and inspiring the students have been.
Despite the media's attempts to try and divert attention away from the real issue, I think most of the population, the general public, was quite sympathetic with the students. So I think the media, in fact, failed to do what they intended.
The police were roundly condemned for employing a crowd control tactic known as kettling, in which students were forcibly detained and corralled by gangs of armed officers.
The police response to the big student demonstrations was ridiculously over the top, where they closed off both ends of Whitehall during the demonstration and kept thousands of students in an open-air effective prison for most of the day.
I think it is unlawful to detain people, and that's what's happening. The police are detaining people just as if they'd taken them to a police station and locked them in a cell. They are detaining people without charge, obviously thousands at a time, the overwhelming majority of whom will have committed no crime, aren't even suspected by the police of committing a crime, and therefore are being illegally detained.
I mean, there was a particularly striking image on the second demonstration, where the first time we actually got kettled, where everybody was kettled inside and they'd left a police van in the middle of the area where they knew they were going to kettle us. There was a lot of discussion about whether this was left there on purpose or not. And whether it was or not, I don't know. But the police surely have the ability to have removed it to prevent it being smashed up. And then also in that kettle, we were kettled inside, and then other people were kettled outside in another kettle. And then outside of that, all the parents were kettled. Parents had come down to help their children, bring them food, bring them clothes, because it was the middle of the winter, absolutely freezing, and you had 10-year-old, 12-year-old people, you know, not expecting to be stuck there for 9 hours. Very scared, very upset, and their parents came down to assist them, and then they got kettled as well. I mean, there's not a quicker way of, I think, radicalising students and parents and people in general than locking up young children for 9 hours in the cold.
We protected Parliament, we did that, but quite clearly there's some dreadful incidents, some dreadful behaviour. My officers came under some terrible attacks. The unpredictability of, I was going to say demonstrators, but I'd rather describe them as thugs, meant that we're dealing with a very difficult situation.
I visited the demonstration, I was part of it, and I met many of the students coming out of what's called the kettle later on, and they were very traumatised and very stressed by the experience. The overreaction of the police actually created the tensions in the demonstration, but the idea that it was a huge violent demonstration is simply incorrect.
And so I think it's absolutely wrong for the police to cavalry charge a bunch of students that don't possess any arms or are not out there to intend to do violence.
Have you seen this?
Huh?
This one.
No?
The police are handing
the
them
police?
Out. Yeah. Oi, don't. Here's my personal favourite, I'll show you. Will I be contained?
Contained.
I don't know.
Every protest, they have tried to kettle students. And it's a technique which is purposely used to flare up anger, to try and create conflict. And it's ridiculous. I think it's a disgusting tactic, and it should be outlawed. It shouldn't be allowed.
Student anger was levelled at the leader of the Liberal Democrats, Nick Clegg, and his party's coalition with Tory Prime Minister David Cameron. The Liberal Democrats had done a U-turn on pre-election promises to end tuition fees.
I think that the plans that, as far as I can make out, both the Conservatives and Labour parties are cooking up in one way or another to raise the cap on tuition fees is wrong. We will resist, vote against, campaign against any lifting of that cap.
The students are really disappointed with what the Lib Dems have done, going back on their manifesto promises. I think it's really highlighted how parliamentary politics, in parliamentary politics, politicians can say whatever they like when they're not in power, and then, you know, when they're in power, they can go back on these.
This is an extraordinarily difficult issue, and I've been entirely open about the fact that we have not been able to deliver the policy that we held in opposition.
And the fact that the people who are doing this, the Lib Dems, who are effectively the people allowing this to happen, actually campaigned on scrapping it. Like, I literally cannot think of anything more like hypocritical.
Well, I voted Lib Dems.
Yep, same.
Back then, because of the anti fees. Yeah. And yeah. I'm sorry, guys, but I did. And,
no, we went and did it together.
I didn't mean it. Well, I did mean it at the time. And they've just gone back on that, and it's a complete lie. And then they're going back on so many other things. So, like, what are we being run by?
Student activism began to flourish in the mid to late 60s, with demonstrations against the US war in Vietnam. Protesters also championed an egalitarian, anti-racist and anti-colonial agenda. On the 22nd of March 1968, students took over an administration building at Paris University, Nanterre, and inspired a wave of similar protests across France.
It was the beginning of a student movement which really was very, very militant for the next 10 years, and we had very big occupations after 68. In the early 70s, we had very big occupations at a number of the universities over a whole range of issues. The student movement today has some similarities with 68, has lots of differences. The main differences, I suppose, is that the students are faced with incomparably harder conditions than we had. They have to work harder, they have to pay fees. We used to get grants, we used to be given money for going to university, and they're not given those kind of things. And of course they live in a world where they have to get more and more qualifications.
Many would question the logic of raising tuition fees in order to complicate the pursuit of higher education. But was the hike in fees just a cynical snub by the Condemn coalition, or an unavoidable policy of a state forced to reassess its priorities?
It's ideological and political, although they say it's because of the deficit, because there's an economic reason for it. They say that they can't afford to pay for education. We know that if they prevented tax evasion alone, that would plug the entire deficit, not just the education budget, the entire deficit by 80%.
Their priority is to fight wars. Their priority is to bail out the banks. Their priorities are not public services and the interests of ordinary people.
There are choices to be made, and I do think that we could instead cut arms expenditure, cancel the replacement of the nuclear missile system we have in this country, and introduce taxation that is far more aggressive against the wealthiest people in our society rather than against the poorest.
All the governments now have reacted to the banking crisis of 2008 by saying that it's the ordinary people who are going to have to pay for the crisis. Now, in this country, they're saying we can't afford libraries, we can't afford a health service like we've had. The health service was set up in this country in 1948 when Britain was a very poor country. Now, they've incomparably more money, but they say they can't afford a health service, they can't afford any of these things. And the student fees are part of this. They're part of shifting the burden of welfare, of education, of all these things, away from the state and towards the individual. And the individual, too bad if they can't afford to pay. That's the basic attitude that these people have. No rest, no rest.
Many in Britain identify the current financial system of fractional reserve banking and usury as a catalyst for social destruction.
The system that they represent has gone into an absolutely huge crisis. You know, we were told actually famously by Gordon Brown during the boom that there would be no return to boom and bust. That was a few years ahead of us returning to the most catastrophic slump since the 1930s. And the people who believe that the capitalist economy simply expands onward and upward without interruption, without problem, have been proved to be fundamentally wrong.
The UK is in the situation very much like as the USA is. The banking interests have come to control everything. Like a parasite, they actually control the minds of the politicians. And they actually end up with solutions which are purely for the benefit of the bankers. Education not for sale.
The bankers into jail. We are in this mess because we loaned billions of pounds to the banks. Now, when you make a loan, you expect the people that you loan the money to pay it back. But what the government's policy is, it says, look, we've made this terrific loan to the banks, but somebody else who aren't the banks, i.e. the taxpayer, are going to have it to pay it back. Now, the banks are returning to profit now, so the people that we loaned the money to should repay it, and therefore we could maintain the welfare state and not actually tax the people who are already heavily taxed. There's already another report out today showing that we have the largest gap now between the rich and the poor in this country that we've had since 1940, and if it goes on any longer, we'll have a bigger gap than we did under Queen Victoria. Now, that is not a situation in which you should be asking ordinary people to pay for the debts of the banks.
This is a protest against the public sector cuts being imposed by the coalition government with no democratic mandate.
Is there a solution? Yes, there is. You look at the cause, at the fundamental cause, and you can see the solution. The first thing is that the banking system is completely out of control. It creates money endlessly. Oh, why not, say people? Because, you see, it's lending for the real economy. It is not lending for the real economy. And there you have the second aspect. It creates money endlessly and adds administration cost, adds interest, and does not put it into the real economy, and does not put it into the real economy and the development spreading of the real economy. So you can never have a true balance of supply and demand. Now, that's the fundamental analysis of what is wrong.
The least that the government's spending is £7 million a day in Libya. The cost of the Afghan war is much, much, much greater than that. The cost of the Trident nuclear missile system is £75 billion. If these were put together, the overwhelming majority of the entire national debt, not just the student fees, which is a minuscule part of this, but the entire national debt could be paid back out of cuts in current wars and in the cost of Trident.
So the way forward is to say the concepts behind free market capitalism are fundamentally flawed. The practices behind free market capitalism are fundamentally flawed. We must have a market economy effect for everybody, a private economy for everybody, and we do that by controlling the bank's ability to create money, and we open up a new supply which can be administered by the banks, must be properly administered by the banks. In which you develop and spread the real economy to everybody, and you do things like getting rid of interest on student fees, getting rid of interest on public capital projects, getting rid of interest on anything which is to do with the real economy and the needs of society.
My problem with it is the ideology of it. Like, they're saying we have to make these cuts because of this debt. We didn't cause, as students, any of the financial crisis, any of it at all. And the fact that they're letting the bankers get off with a £2 billion levy, I think it's... I mean, that sounds like a lot, but it's absolutely nothing. They deal in trillions and trillions of pounds every day. And what they're doing to the students, they cut EMA. Is it 30 quid a week?
Yeah, 30 quid a week.
Like, that doesn't sound like much. That isn't much. But for some people, it's everything. And, like, the fact that they think it's fair to just put it on the students...
Yeah.
And think they can get away with it is the thing that I think is absolutely outrageous.
Order, order.
The bill to increase tuition fees was passed on the 9th of December 2010, with the Condem coalition raising the cap from £3,290 up to £9,000 in some cases. Students who hope to attend university in 2012 can now expect a rise in interest rates from 1.5% to 3%, plus inflation on their loans.
Move. Thank you. The question is as on the order paper. As many as have that opinion say aye.
Aye.
Of the contrary, no.
No!
Division, clear the lobbies.
Well, we already see some of the impacts. You will know, as I do, that during the student protests, the government said, look, £9,000, that's just the upper limit. Most colleges won't charge that. There's a range between £6,000 and £9,000. We now see that nearly every college is charging the upper limit.
The quality of education will suffer and access to education will suffer. I don't see how tripling fees to £9,000 a year, which was, remember, supposed to be the exception and which has now become the norm. Most universities are now charging £9,000 because somehow there's this idea that if they don't charge £9,000, a degree at that university will somehow be less valuable.
We've also seen the study showing that it will disproportionately affect poor and working class students. They will make a calculation saying that if I do this, just out of fees, I'll be saddled with a debt, never mind about the maintenance loan of some £30,000. £30,000. We're already seeing the studies saying that that's deterring people from going. We're also seeing a number of course closures. In the London Metropolitan University, now 70% of the courses are closing. It's taking a hatchet to the higher education system in this country.
Having seen the bill steamrolled through Parliament and heard the voices of dissent silenced, some now claim that further resistance is futile. Others, however, believe that the fight goes on, irrespective of the setbacks they've endured so far. On March 26, 2011, just 3 months after the crackdown on student demonstrations, the Trades Union Congress organised a mass demonstration against government cuts in public spending.
Well, I'm here protesting because these savage cuts are threatening to destroy our public sector and the services that we all hold so dear. You know, this is the foundation of our society and it's absolutely been destroyed, and I just feel everyone should stand up for that.
I'm here because as a Year 9 student, I don't think it's right they should be cutting the education. My school's not got much money. Why are they making cuts in the education budget? They shouldn't be making cuts in education, they should be making cuts somewhere else, somewhere where the money's not particularly needed.
Without this mass demonstration, you know, it wouldn't have created the debate that it did. It wouldn't have actually, you know, made MPs and the general society aware of what was happening to education. We needed to have this mass protest.
Well, I'm a student. I'm currently in year 10. I'm doing my GCSEs, and I'm worried about my future and going to university. I want to make something of myself, but it's hard to with these cuts.
We've got to power! Sister, can you hear me?
What we now need to be looking to is the students to link up with the wider anger about austerity, with the people who are losing their jobs in the public service, the people who are angry about losing their benefits, angry about VAT increases and so on. And to have a revolt that isn't just students, actually, that's a mass popular revolt of working people.
What I always say, and I've been involved in many, many strikes and protests over the years, and what I always say to every group of protesters is this: I can't guarantee that if we fight, we'll win. But I can guarantee that if we don't fight, we'll lose. And I can also guarantee that if we fight, we stand a chance of winning. And that's the only undertaking that anybody in opposition politics can give.